You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares.
Hi there, thanks for listening. Charlotte Greenway in for Nick today on Friday the 5th of April, and I'll be joined shortly by Lydia Hislop, and we've got quite an international podcast ahead, as we'll hear from Jérôme Renier on the rise of Factor Cheval, who took the Dubai Turf last weekend, but it's not always been plain sailing with him. Peter Rotondo discusses a new partnership between First Racing in the US and the Jockey Club here in Britain before we head to Hong Kong for our weekly segment. But first, starting in Britain, we're just 8 days out from the Aintree Grand National, and what a story it would be if Kitty's Light were to land the race for trainer Christian Williams and his family, just over a year on from his daughter Betsy being diagnosed with leukemia. He looks to have a great chance and he's well fancied by the punters, so I put a call into Christian a little bit earlier to see how he's feeling with just over a week to go.
Good, thanks. Not too nervous yet, just a little bit of excitement, and horse is looking great, so fingers crossed, just need a dry week now.
Yeah,
what
have you made of all the rain that we've been having? Probably won't suit him if we have too much more, will it?
Not too much. We haven't really had a go on heavy ground with him yet, and he seems physically stronger halfway through last year, leading into those big results. He was a lot stronger horse, and he galloped through it okay at Cheltenham a couple of weeks ago, so we're not quite writing him off on the ground. Ideally, we'd want the ground fast, but no, we're excited, and like I said, we can't really, nothing we can do about the ground, but he galloped through it okay at Cheltenham, so fingers crossed.
What did you make of that run at Cheltenham, and how tuned up was he for that day?
We've had a little bit of a slow season with him, and we're having a terrible run into Cheltenham, and then about a fortnight before Cheltenham, everything just fell into place, so he wouldn't have been squeezed or 100% fit for that race. So for him to finish where he finished and got round, we were delighted, and everything is geared around Aintree, you know, even from the start of the season. Aintree was the plan, and he's in good order.
I saw on Instagram, I think it was yesterday, he was having a massage. What's left to do with him between now and next Saturday?
Yeah, massage done, schooling done. He's near enough. If the race was tomorrow, it would be perfect. So he'd just probably do a strong piece of work on Tuesday on the beach. But nearly everything's done with him now. We're just excited now, looking forward to a week Saturday.
Have you built some sort of Aintree-style fences at home that he's been able to have a go at, or are you just not worried about that?
We did that at Lambourne last week, so that bit's done. But we have got a little bit of spruce. We might put it on the fences tomorrow. Got a few owners coming in, so we might all chip in and put it on one of the fences, might give him a school on Wednesday, maybe Wednesday next week. But it's not something. He schooled well at Lambourne. He flew up over the fence his first time. He gave the one fence a bit of a clout the second time, which is always, you know, helpful, because that'll happen during a race at one stage. So no, he did a bit of everything at Lambourne. We were pleased. We were pleased the way he galloped and pleased the way he schooled.
And his story so far has been amazing. What he's done for you and your family through such a difficult period, you'd probably struggle to find a tougher horse in training, judging on what he did last season. What would it mean to you if he were to run a massive race next weekend?
That'd be wonderful. And, you know, first and foremost, I was brought up with horses when I was young. So, you know, I got the love of horses in my blood. So, you know, I don't want to be getting yourself all wound up on winning the race, and all the horse can do is he can go out there, try his best, and, you know, if he finishes in the first six, it'd be great. But, you know, he's also a very special horse who did what he did last year at Ayr and then going to Sandown only a week later and winning the Bet365 Gold Cup. Then he's obviously very special, so he's capable of doing special things, and wouldn't it be wonderful if he could win the Grand National?
It really would, and we'll very much have all our fingers crossed for you. Best of luck next weekend, Christian, and thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Christian Williams there, and I will certainly be cheering home Kitty's Light next weekend. What a story that would be, and I'm sure many of you will too. It was reported in The Guardian yesterday, Lydia, by Greg Wood, that Animal Rising won't disrupt the Grand National like they did last year before the start, and I'm sure that'll be music to all trainers, owners and jockeys' ears, as well as fans for the sport. But can this be seen as a win for racing? Because Animal Rising have sort of justified this decision by almost saying that their work is done.
Yes, I think it's complex. It's an exclusive by Greg Wood in The Guardian yesterday, and he says that there will be an announcement today, Friday, that from an Animal Rising that they won't target this year's race, and is suspending its campaign of direct action against racing indefinitely. At the time of recording, you and I, we haven't yet seen that confirmed by Animal Rising. But he does quote Nathan McGovern, who is a spokesperson for Animal Rising. And he said on Thursday, and this is what you're referring to, he said, "We won't be there. And the reason for that is that as far as we can see, last year there was a huge public conversation on the back of the Grand National, Epsom, etc. And it would appear that the public have in large part been convinced that they don't want racing to be part of the fabric of British culture going forward. If we look at the trend in dropping attendances at the races, that's downwards year on year. And beyond that, there are also public surveys and polling. YouGov's current figures on horse racing are around a 47% disapproval rating and only a 23% approval rating, and those numbers speak for themselves." And then at the end of the article, he's asked whether his Animal Rising's direct campaign against racing may be a thing of the past, and he says, "Never say never, but is disrupting races going to be the most effective way to end horse racing? We think not, because we think the public has already made that decision for themselves." So that is Animal Rising, or spokesperson for Animal Rising, saying that they think that they have, in effect, won the conversation with the general public. And I think they're wrong there. I think they are badly wrong on that. To be pointing at dropping attendances and attaching it purely to their protests, I think, is very much an overreach. We all know that there are many complicated factors impacting on attendance, albeit that we might have to acknowledge that it might, for some people, be a factor. Certainly, they have reached the general public with their concerns about the use of horses in horse racing, but also the use of animals in any form. Don't forget that this is an animal rights group that don't wish animals to be used in any form, including as pets, and they wouldn't want people to be, you know, happy hackers riding their horses around the fields and forests and woodland around them. They don't want that either. They want horses to run free, and all the improbability of that. But they did manage to make an impact. The one thing that I think that they have succeeded in doing, and this was discussed on the podcast several times this week, is uniting racing in a way and mobilising racing in a way that I haven't seen and have been hoping to see for many, many years now. And with the horsepower.co.uk website having been launched this week, I think that they have left horse racing in a much stronger, much front foot position than they were going into the Grand National this time last year. So whilst I think, yes, they have done some damage, they have reached the public, I think they have mobilised racing and woken racing up and asked racing to take some self-responsibility as well, which is a positive thing, which I think can only be a positive for the longevity of the sport.
Well, around this time of year, around Grand National time, there's always that slightly more intense focus on horse welfare and on how we as a sport convey our message in this respect. And to that end, I, and I'm sure many others, are really heartened that Horse Power, British Racing's new platform, is going live with its digital hub, www.horsepwr.co.uk, has become the central resource for horse welfare information. It's designed to share and promote the facts around welfare in horse racing and the life of a thoroughbred. And it brings together information on horse welfare in one easy-to-find, easy-to-read place, and crucially, with facts, and plenty of them, and data provided, and questions answered. Horsepower delves into those areas that racing has committed to improve, from reducing risk on and off the racecourse to better supporting horses when they leave the sport, which is something we've been hearing about an awful lot with the work that's been done on the thoroughbred census that we showcased on the podcast during the last couple of weeks. Now, the campaign's name, Horsepower, and that PWR acronym, which is at the end of the website, was derived from the ambition to better connect with people around purpose, welfare, and responsibility. I myself particularly like the first of those, purpose. I think it's important when you're talking about welfare, as we saw after the Grand National last year, to take a bold and confident approach, which puts the thoroughbred right at the front and centre of this entire campaign to promote its status and purpose as an equine athlete. I think it's incumbent on all of us, and to that end, I'd call on all of you to share and support the campaign where and when you possibly can. And you can do that by visiting www.horsepwr.co.uk, and the hashtag is horse, capital P, capital W, capital R. It's a cross-industry campaign led by the BHA and GBR, so British Horse Racing and Great British Racing, and it's supported by the independently chaired Horse Welfare Board and by the Jockey Club. So I'd urge you to get involved. The website again, www.horsepwr.co.uk, and hashtag your tweets, horse, capital P, capital W, capital R. This is British Racing's new Horsepower campaign.
Lydia, from what you've seen of the Horsepower campaign that launched yesterday, what have you made of it?
I really like it. I like the fact that there are clear messages, that they're very clear in who they are. This campaign at this stage is being targeted at. It is being targeted at people who already like the sport or love the sport. And for people who love the sport, it's going to be a place to access data to be able to explain the sport and to feel confident about the sport and feel confident explaining about the sport to people who might not know it so well. It's also a resource for people who have a half interest in the sport and are interested about it, and maybe have had their curiosity piqued by the loud conversation going on with the animal rights group over the last 12 months. And so this, again, is a resource. It also means that horse racing has actually started to mobilise in asking itself some hard questions. This is something that the Horse Welfare Board, in conjunction with the British Horse Racing Authority, have been seeking to do for some time with the Life Well Lived strategy, which predates Animal Rising. And but what the Animal Rising protest did last year was to turbocharge the intention and the money and the focus and attention that was needed in order to drive the Life Well Lived strategy forward. So I applaud the Horsepower website. I like the messages it's putting across. I like the fact that the campaign strategy has been tested with focus groups, and I like the area of resource. I also like the fact that it is clear throughout the website that this is not horse racing's final answer, that this is the first step in showing everybody what a responsible industry the horse racing industry is, and in asking itself some difficult questions. So a couple of questions that I was asked on Twitter, or X as we're now meant to call it, last night about this, was one of them was about whether the fatality figures cover injuries that happen away from the racecourse. And it's quite clear, if you have a look on the website, that there is an asterisk there which says this data includes all horses fatally injured as a direct result of their injuries on race day or within 48 hours of race day. And then it says British Racing is currently working with the industry and in particular trainers to capture full visibility on horses who are fatally injured in training, i.e. away from the racecourse. And I was asked about this, which is clearly a gap that needs to be better understood. So I'm going to follow that up. I've been speaking to Robin Mansley, the British Horse Racing Authority, and that's going to lead to a further conversation on the practicalities of this and what might be the timeline and what might be the hurdles to achieving this with James Gibbon, who is in charge of veterinary and welfare for the BHA. I'm working on that at the moment. But I did speak to Gabby Whitfield, who's the head of welfare communications, and they pointed out that not only is... You know how if there's a fatality on a racecourse, there is the normal review that the BHA carries out. But now the Horse Welfare Board also looked at those fatalities in greater detail. There was an analogy made between that an airplane crashes. So it's looking at what else can be learned, every little scrap of thing that can be learned from every particular fatality on a race course. So that is something that the Horse Welfare Board has taken forward, but that they acknowledge that in training injuries and fatalities is something that needs to be better understood and a gap that needs to be closed. And this is what I mean about, I'm really pleased that the website makes it clear that this is not a final answer. This is an evolving project and something that racing is striving to do better on. And the other point that was made to me via Twitter last night was about the census traceability, and that given it was a voluntary response, that really horse racing still doesn't know what it doesn't know. And racing needs to get better in terms of traceability. And it and the Horse Welfare Board, the BHA, have been very open about that and have been making ground on it. And this was, again, I think the census, a first step. ROR, retraining of racehorses, have 40% of the retired population and 60% weren't known about. And what this census has done has enabled to advance the understanding of 80% of the horse population. And I should just stress that the outward communications say former racehorses, because the public understands any thoroughbred as being a former racehorse, even if it hasn't actually made it to the point of training. Whereas actually, this percentage includes all horses bred for the purpose of horse racing and includes horses that did not make it to a training yard. So as a result of the census, British horse racing has a good understanding of 80% of the population. Now, that clearly means that there are 20% that the racing industry can't yet trace as a first step outside of horse racing. But that, again, is a gap that needs to be closed. And the encouraging thing about the 80% is that 40% of those are still with their first owner post racing, and almost 90% are only three owners or less away from that first step out, which means that there is a greater understanding and a greater access to what have happened to these horses. And if the ambition, I think, of horse racing, and particularly the Horse Welfare Board, is to have an auto-enrolment between racing administration and the retraining of racehorses, so that when a horse steps out of training or doesn't make it into training, that first step, they are auto-enrolled to retraining of racehorses. And that means that they the industry can continue communication with the owner, and that information would be updated on a yearly basis. So again, I think this 80%, the census number, is very encouraging. We know a lot more than we used to know, but that this is what horse racing would say. But must the horse racing industry do a lot more? Absolutely. That all of these gaps need to be closed, which is why this is a work in progress.
Well, Lydia, as well as discussing horsepower yesterday, Tom and Rishi also discussed an open banking request by Bet365 to a customer for his primary bank account. Rishi was quite adamant that this has more than crossed the line. What are your thoughts?
I 100% agree with him. I thought it was a good discussion yesterday. I raised the spectre of open banking on the Friday of the Cheltenham Gold Cup meeting, on the Cheltenham Gold Cup day, in fact. If this is the proposed solution being put forward by betting companies, the Gambling Commission and the government, Stuart Andrew, the betting minister, for the way in which affordability checks can be carried out at a higher level in a inverted commas frictionless manner, then it is not going to work, because it is such a massive intrusion of privacy. And we should say it's not just Bet365. There are other examples of bookmakers who have since come to light via social media that have been asking for the same intrusive detail. It's not just the hoops that punters have to jump through. It's the intrusion into their privacy. They should not be asked to give up such personal details, full stop, in order to be able to have a bet. Particularly at the level that most people are seeking to have a bet. The companies themselves can't be trusted in terms of data. They've shown that they have failed in terms of their responsibility to their customers, in terms of private data, and in many other ways, again and again and again over the years. So that can't be trusted. And the particular example that, as Rishi pointed out yesterday, that was put up, this third-party bet budget, say in their terms and conditions that they reserve the right to be able to sell on the data details. I mean, people have slowly understood, woken up to the immense value, financial and commercial value of their personal data. Their bank account details, their primary bank account details, is taking it to a whole other level, you know, beyond your name, your address, and, you know, some basic high-level details about you. These are intimate details. And we cannot go into an environment whereby this becomes permissible for a betting company or a third party working for a betting company who also have their own commercial ends that they're pursuing, are able to ask for intrusive information like this routinely in order to be able to have a small bet. And my concern is that the horse racing industry doesn't fully understand the wild west that punters are facing out there. Now, I've spoken to the British Horse Racing Authority, and they have asserted that they are aware of it, that this is at the forefront of their ongoing conversations with Stuart Andrew, and also with the Gambling Commission. And so we look forward to watching this space. But in the meantime, what punters are going through at the moment in order to just be able to practice a entirely legal leisure pursuit, just to serve the purpose of people who are the correct concern for a very, very small minority of people who are addicted to gambling or at risk to gambling addiction, and the fact that the proposals that are being put forward would just send them off into the ether anyway and not actually help them, would just move them on. You know, this whole landscape is an absolute debacle, and the Gambling Commission, but also the betting companies, have a lot to answer for in this area, because it's a mess at the moment.
And the sort of gambling reform, we keep hearing that we're going to get more information soon. Do we know any more, or sort of, do we have a timeline for this yet?
Well, we keep being told it's imminent. You know, we need to have more information about, you know, how the pilot on so-called frictionless checks is going to work. We need to hear more about thresholds. But it's not just affordability checks, is it? I mean, this is the problem. There's lots of different ways they can get you. They can call it affordability checks. They can call it anti-money laundering. They can also call it know your customer. And unless all of those things align, unless there is a consistent policy across the country, as far as the Gambling Commission is concerned, and all of its different regional teams that go and check compliance from betting companies up and down the land, unless there's consistency from the Gambling Commission's approach across the country, and there is consistency from bookmakers to customers, no matter what betting company you use, until we have a consistency approach that ties up affordability checks, anti-money laundering, and know your customer, so that there is not an angle whereby punters can be needlessly hassled, restricted, and generally have obstacles put in their way so that they walk away from the sport or move to the black market rather than engage. Until we have that, we are nowhere. So this is not just about affordability checks. It is about the whole landscape. And the Gambling Commission is not being consistent currently. It's not being, I don't think it's being publicly honest about the situation that's out there. I assume it knows what its internal teams are doing, but maybe it doesn't. There seems to be some evidence that there are inconsistencies, as I said, on a regional basis that bookmakers themselves are experiencing. So I do have some sympathy for bookmakers who are having to respond to what the Gambling Commission say they must do in order to be able to uphold their licenses or else get very large fines. Very limited sympathy with them. And then beyond from them to the customer, the kind of landscape that they have got for customer means that, as I said, they can get you one way or another depending on which particular tool they use. And there must be consistency, there must be transparency, there must be clarity, and none of these things are present at the moment.
Lydia, just looking at the racing this weekend, it's obviously a real shame that the rain has led to the abandonment of Stratford and also Kelso, which was a premier fixture. But on the flat, we've got Kempton and Chelmsford on the all-weather. And I just think, I saw an article earlier in the week with Carl Burke in the Racing Post that Carl was calling for the flat season to be sort of postponed, pushed back, and started the weekend preceding the Craven meeting because it just feels like we're at a bit of a lull at the moment. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, if he wants it on the weekend, on the Saturday preceding the Craven meeting, well, that's Grand National Day, and I don't think that's a good plan. But I can see that this weekend, in terms of particularly given the wet weather that is assuaging the battering the country, I think assailing is always the word I was looking for, the country, that we've ended up with quite thin fare. The focus in terms of flat racing will be on the once marvellous card. I remember when it used to be on turf, it's now on Polytrack, which features the Snowdrop, the Queen's Prize and the Rosebery. That will be a really good card. That does interest me. But, you know, could the Lincoln move somewhere forward to, and Carl makes this argument in his piece with the Racing Post this week, that because we know that there is climate change, that we are increasingly getting wet weather in this early part of the year. And because of the advent of Middle Eastern racing, might it be more sensible for Britain to kick off the Lincoln a little bit later? The Jockeys Championship already doesn't start until Guinness weekend, which I think is an error personally. Never really agreed with that point, but he thinks it would be better to shrink the gap essentially between the Lincoln and the Craven. I can see the argument from that from a turf point of view. The only thing I would say is that in terms of the sort of Middle Eastern focus, it's more about jockey availability and trainer and owner focus potentially, and also punter focus possibly, to change that, because the kind of horses that would be attracted to run in the Lincoln aren't necessarily those horses that are running in the Middle East. Quite often they are a slightly higher level than that. We had the top weight with an official rating of 111, who was Migration, but most of them were in the high 90s or low noughties and low 100s. So I can see the call, but it can't be the Saturday preceding the Craven. I do see the argument about the ground, and certainly this weekend could have withstood having both the Lincoln and Kempson's very good Rosebery meeting.
Well, talking of racing over the next couple of days, it's time for Time Forms, something for the weekend, and I'm joined by Sporting Live's Dave Ord. Dave, thanks for joining me this morning. Where's the focus going to be this weekend?
Well, Charlotte, we're on the road to the Kentucky Derby. I mean, for a moment, I thought Ruby and Lydia had managed, like the Beatles before them, to crack America. But obviously, it's the series that's taking us to Churchill Downs. It's the 3:30 at Chelmsford, which is a fascinating race in its own right. The state of the turf courses around the country, we've seen more and more trainers having to utilise the all-weather. And it's attracted a horse in Capulet for Abel Bryan, who you think could just be one who would complete that load and contest the Kentucky Derby itself. He's, of course, a son of Justify, really promising in the three runs as a two-year-old, winning at Dundalk, only start on an artificial surface so far, second to Diego Velasquez in that Irish Champions weekend, and then third at Newmarket on his final start in the Royal Lodge. And that's a really interesting run in context to Saturday's. The Time Form race reporter on the day thought he was ill at ease on the course, but wanted a sterner test of stamina as well. And the one thing I don't think he's guaranteed to get in this race on Saturday is that the track's more conventional. If you're going around a bend, of course. But this is the bottom end of his stamina capabilities. He's in 11-8 favourite, best price at the moment. And it's quite interesting on Time Form ratings. He's got a weight-adjusted rating of 114 that actually only puts him £1 clear of Cuban Tiger and Orm, both of whom have got race fitness on their side. So I think if Capulet was to win the conditions race at Chelmsford, win it well on Saturday, we could actually have a legitimate horse on the road to the Kentucky Derby and could take in the race itself.
Well, yeah, for sure. And by Justify, probably the sky's the limit for him if any of his other progeny are anything to go by.
Absolutely. That's the exciting thing, isn't it? I mean, what a boost it would be for Coolbar as well if they got a legitimate Kentucky Derby son of Justify trained in Europe as well. I mean, you just don't know where he could end up as a stallion, do you?
No, you certainly don't. And just in terms of Time Form ratings, is there anything else we should be looking out for this weekend?
Yeah, there's two interesting runners in the two divisions, or the two versions of the conditions race at Kempton. Both have got big time form P's. Now, these are attached to a horse's rating if the handicappers and analysts think he's capable of making more than the normal amount of improvement. And they're both once raced. The first one up's Devoted Queen for Godolphin in the 3:45, the Virgin Bet Daily Extra Places British EBF in this condition stakes at Kempton. She's one from one. She made her debut at Newmarket in October. Won a seven-runner maiden, really impressively by 2 1/4 lengths from Vicario. She's a daughter of Kingman, as I say, a half-sister to One Ruler, beautifully bred. She's got various time form flags, a horse in focus. Her sectional times are really good as well. She impressed on the clock on that debut, opened up to any amount of improvement. Weight adjusted time form figure of 101, big P. She's top rated in the race only by a pound, but she's 25-1, 20-1 for the 1,000 guineas. She could be a significant horse on Saturday. And then in the Colts version at 4:25, there's an unbeaten Godolphin horse at the top in Notable Speech, Son of Debari, 2 from 2 at Kempton this winter. But the horse was arguably even more interesting is Valvano from Rafe Beckett. He won a maiden at Nottingham in the mud last October. He too has picked up that big P from time form because he really impressed. He was learning on the job that day, very strong in the market. He was clearly expected. But the way he came clear once the penny dropped to beat Tokyo Bay by 6 lengths, marked him out as a horse to follow. Lots of people excited about him within the time form organisation. He's about £20 behind Notable Speech at the minute on their weight adjusted ranges, but I'd imagine he's going to run a lot better than that number would suggest on Saturday. So they're two exciting horses we're looking forward to seeing in action.
Well, look forward to following them, and Dave, look forward to welcoming you back next week for I'm sure a bit of a Grand National tip, or sort of being able to I never have any luck in that race, so I'm hoping you'll be able to help me out.
Well, fingers crossed. I mean, I've had about 45 or 50 goals. I think I've had 3 winners. So we'll do our best. The strike rate isn't the best. But guys, it's wonderful to say that we're talking the Grand National next week, isn't it? Aintree just around the corner. Hopefully, if we can get a bit of dry weather, a bit of decent ground, it could be a fantastic 3-day festival as well.
Exactly. Fingers crossed it dries up. And Dave, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
And you. Thanks, Charlotte.
Well, just casting an eye back now to last weekend, where there was a fantastic win in the Dubai Turf for Factor Cheval, trained by Jerome Renier. And Jerome joins me on the line now. Jerome, that was a first Group 1 for Factor Cheval. And from what I understand, this horse has tested you over the years and has quite the backstory from when he was bought as a foal to making his debut at 3. Just explain his story.
He has been purchased as a foal at the in Tatsals by Hubert Honoré and Alessandro Marconi, and they were trying to pinook him as a yearling, and obviously everything went wrong for the first time with him because he had a big hematoma and he couldn't walk properly, so he has been bought back. And they say, okay, that's fine, we're going to sell him back at the Breeze Up. And at the Breeze Up, he had a little issue and he couldn't be going to the sales. And that was COVID time, I think. And the sale was removed to Doncaster. So Jennifer Pardano was taking care of him. Couldn't really send a team of people around only one horse. So they've cancelled this idea, and they decided to give it a go and try to race him. And obviously, it wasn't the easiest to deal with. And he was showing plenty of promises, and we were planning on running the newcomer's maiden in Gainsborough in January, the same race that Lazat made his first time out this year. And we couldn't get him to relax and be settled in the starting gate. He just sent two staff to the hospital. So that was a really bad start of the year because I had two people missing at the stable, and I've got this horse ready to go, but couldn't really go. So that was tricky, and we sent him back to Nicolas Blondeau, Horse Whisperer in France. But he had already, he knew the horse because he had been spending a few days there when he was young. So he managed to get him to settle and relax in the starting gate, and he sent me the horse back. And we've been losing a bit of time for the prep. And it was time to find a race for him. So we find a newcomer's race in Saint-Cloud. We knew that the GTHP, the guy in Paris, are very used to difficult horses. So They've done a really good job. Now he's got his blanket on his back and he's pretty quiet, but he was a bit spooky and hard to manage. But Jarl Mosse has done a very good job for his first races in his career, because he gave him some really good lessons and easy races. He was unbeaten after four starts, and yeah, everything. The more he was racing, the better he was behaving, and he was getting more and more serious. And last year, as a four-year-old, he has been starting to travel to England, and first traveled to Goodwood. He has been behaving really well, finishing second to Paddington, and the second travel to England, he was second in the Queen Elizabeth Stakes to Big Rock, and I really liked the way he was behaving. He behaved like a horse who was starting to get mature. So we were planning on sending him to Dubai for his first big race of the year, and we were very happy with the way he has been traveling, adapting himself to his new environment, and everything has been great, and we're very happy with the horse, and we've been getting the draw number 8, which was a good draw to be in the middle of everyone. And he's had a perfect run, perfect ride given by Maxime Guyon, and the horse is always running on and always giving his best, and he has been battling hard to win this race against a really nice Japanese mare.
And just, did it make it even sort of even more special just because of his backstory and all the effort that you and your team have had to put in over the years?
Yeah, sure. I mean, every horse is different, and you have to adapt yourself to them. And I mean, he needs a lot of care, a lot of attention, because he's such a... You can't really ask anyone to take care of him, because he's... Yeah, he's still very spooky, even in his box at the stable. That's his home. He knows the place. And sometimes you arrive with a pair of bandages, and he looks at you like hasn't seen a pair of bandages in his life. So no, he's a character, and he's different to any kind of other horses that won't be asking themselves any question. He's always asking himself too many questions. So, but once the gates open, he's not asking himself any more questions. He just goes and gives everything. So he's just an amazing horse for that. I mean, he never lets you down, and you can have you can trust him 100%. He will be giving his best all the time.
So he's proven he can behave himself when he goes abroad. What sort of campaign might you have mapped out for him for the rest of the season?
But he's done so well the straight course in Royal Ascot, in Ascot last year, so we could be aiming for Royal Ascot with the Queen Anne, but he could do the Prince of Wales as well, because he can be stretched out to a mile and a quarter, I think, now as a five-year-old. So he will probably be entered in both races, and we'll see depending on the opposition and the condition as well, depending on the ground. And after, he can go back to Goodwood for the Sussex, and he could try maybe the Irish Champion Stakes in Leopardstown if he can stay over a mile and a quarter. And he can go back to Ascot at the end of the year and maybe aim for Hong Kong for a last start in 2024, because they were pretty disappointing we didn't go for the Queen Elizabeth Cup. And but that was too close, and it was really hard to give him another big race only 4 weeks after such a hard battle. So yeah, he will have a European campaign, and we will see at the end of the year what would be the best for him. But ideally, I'd love to come back next year to Dubai to try to keep the his cap and his crown for the Dubai Turf, because it's a very nice track for him, and he's done it really well. So we'd love to come back next year to Dubai.
Well, Jerome, thank you so much for talking to me, and it's got a really exciting campaign mapped out, and it's great that we'll get to see him quite a few times in Britain again this year.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Lydia, just listening to Jerome Renier there, it's great to hear that he's got an international campaign marked out for this horse, because he seems like he's still improving, and they're being ambitious.
Well, certainly he be finished. He started this season with an improved performance, didn't he, in the Dubai Turf. As far as I can see, that is a career best effort. And he was fabulously consistent last season. The really good second in the Sussex Stakes and also the third in the Moulin. Those were high level runs, and he ran a creditable second in the QE2 on his final start as well, albeit arguably not quite up to those previous two runs. It's fantastic that we're going to see him potentially at Royal Ascot and at Goodwood, that he's going to Ireland for the Irish Championship Stakes, back to Ascot and then Hong Kong. I mean, what an exciting campaign. I'm really, really delighted to hear that Jérôme Renier is going to campaign him on the front foot again. And certainly his achievements from last season and already this suggests he's well justified to be doing that.
Yeah, and actually, just interestingly, looking at those races last year that you mentioned, he ran so well at Goodwood and also Ascot. It was really soft testing ground that day, and he looked like maybe he just appreciated that decent ground at Maidan.
Yeah, he did. And I mean, in the Moulin was similarly decent ground as well. I mean, we don't actually know what he's like beyond good, do we? We don't know if he did encounter good to them, if it ever stops raining, what would happen? What would happen as a result of that? That would be an unknown for him. But as you say, he's very effective on anything from good to heavy. And it was a career best performance starting out this season.
Well, time to turn our attention stateside now, as I'm joined by Peter Rotondo of First Racing. And Peter, you've got news of a new initiative that's hopefully going to get more US runners in the UK and vice versa. Just tell us a bit more.
Yeah, thank you. This will be the, for First Racing, this will be the second international partnership that we've done. Last year we partnered up with Royal Ascot, which was wildly successful, having two-year-olds come over to Royal Ascot and one actually win the race. Crimson Advocate won the Queen Mary, which was a great way to kick off our efforts. And now we've hooked up with the Jockey Club, and we're talking through a couple of ways to do this. So we'll have in the turf division, right, we have this Charlie Whittingham Stakes. He was a famous Hall of Fame trainer back in the day in the U.S. He has a stakes race named after him on the grass going a mile and a quarter. The winner of that race will get an automatic entry and a travel incentive to run in the Coral Eclipse at Sandown. And then the winner of that race will get an automatic entry and a travel incentive to run in our new event, which we call the California Crown. We'll have three races on the card in late September at Santa Anita. And this one's called the California Crown John Henry Turf. So it's a $750,000 race. And we thought it was a nice way to, it expands upon what we did last year, where we had a winner. We just sent a horse over across the pond. So now it's hopefully we could send one over to you guys and you could send one back over to us. So we kicked it off with that race. And one other one, of course, the Jim McKay Stakes, named after a legendary broadcaster in the U.S. With ABC and the Triple Crown for years on Preakness Day on a sprint on the turf. The winner of that race comes to the July Cup at Newmarket. And of course, the winner of the Newmarket, the winner of the July Cup, will get an automatic entry to the California Crown Eddie D Turf Sprint. Again, all these, it's funny, I'm saying them out loud. They're named after like legendary people in the U.S. Eddie D was Eddie Delahousse, famous jockey in the U.S. Again, to be run on California Crown Day.
And just with the distances that you've picked, we've obviously seen U.S. horses coming over to the UK and running in the July Cup previously. But the sort of mile and a quarter division, we don't see many US contenders over here in our turf races. Have you seen in the US interest and sort of demand from trainers and owners?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think the Royal Ascot experience has, for many of the US trainers and owners, has given everyone sort of this hope that they could come across the pond and be successful or and experience the great race meets that you have. So, yeah, for sure. I mean, I remember as a kid, there was years and years ago, a horse named Four Stars All-Star, ran in I think it was in one of the big Irish races, and this is like in the early 90s, and the idea, then there was sort of a lull, and then there's, of course, with Wesley Ward sort of kicked all back off with Royal Ascot. But yeah, we're seeing a lot more of this. And honestly, with us, we want to bring over the international horses back to our event. Obviously, Breeders' Cup does a tremendous job through the years. Um, of course, attracting horses from all over the world to their event. So we're saying, why don't you stop by right before you get to Breeders' Cup this year, 5 weeks before the Breeders' Cup is the California Crown, where we're giving away millions of dollars in races in California. And maybe you stick around and 5 weeks later you run the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, so what could work quite well as a bit of a prep race, because as you said, the prize money on offer is really valuable. And it is going down from, say, you qualify for these races in the UK, you're then in a Group 1, you're then going to be running in a Grade 2. So I'm assuming these horses will have penalties, will they?
You mean like weight penalties?
Yeah.
It's not as, I got to double check the, sometimes if there's a handicap versus stakes race versus straight weight for age, there's some penalties, but it's not significant in the U.S. These days. In the old days, yeah, they would do that. But it'll be pretty fair. The racing secretaries that weight the horses at this stage of the game, there's try to keep everyone relatively equal. Like, I think there's a big push in the States to do away with these weight allowances and to just have everyone at equal weight. So I don't see a major penalty coming.
And just on those two-year-old win and you're in races ahead of Royal Ascot in the US, they were obviously successful, as you mentioned, last year as Crimson Advocate went on to win the Queen Mary. Will they go again this year?
Yeah, so yes, at Gulfstream, the Royal Palm Juvenile and the Royal Palm Juvenile Fillies will happen again on May 11th. It will happen, and that winner, those winners, same sort of deal. If they win, they'll have the travel incentive and automatic entry into one of the Royal Ascot, juvenile races. And again, last year, Crimson Advocate and No Name Mets both won on the same day, of course, at Gulfstream, and then both ran at Gulfstream, and of course, won the Philly Crimson Advocate and No Name Mets ran. So it was fantastic to see them make it over there. And obviously, there's a lot of hype here and some, right? If you have success right off the bat, now everybody's, pointing to this race, both races, and hopefully get back to Royal Ascot.
Well, Peter, thanks so much for your time this morning, and thanks for filling us in on what it's all about.
Thank you, and stay tuned. Hopefully more of these will be coming down soon, and I'll stop back in with you.
Lydia, it's a great incentive to have this, isn't it? Because we want to see more US horses over here, and it sounds like they're desperate to have our horses heading that way as well.
Yeah, that would be great to hear. And I certainly remember Four Stars All-Star. I wonder whether Peter and I are of a similar vintage. And his narrow defeat to Star of Gdansk in the Irish 2000 Guineas, really battling and game performance. And it's always adds something, doesn't it, when horses from different countries around the world come over to Britain. And one of the problems, I think, very much that Britain has had post-pandemic is that the focus on prize money and the kind of lessening of the potentially the prestige of British racing and the tradition and the historical pull has gone into overdrive, has been accelerated via the pandemic, and everybody's starting to look at their bottom line more objectively. And so I think this is going to be something that British racing is going to have to work harder on if it's going to maintain its pull for people to come from around the world. And that obviously is there's a great focus or a primary focus on prize money, but it can also be on experience. We still don't yet know whether the death of Her Majesty, the late Queen, has had any kind of impact on how the rest of the world views racing in Britain. It's been a great positive that the King and the Queen have gone on to be great supporters of the sport and will be focused on Royal Ascot again this year with Desert Hero. But we don't yet know whether there has been any kind of impact on that. I do think that the Eclipse is a good race to be linking up with America, because clearly, we only had four runners last year. It can be a kind of race that has just a small field, and anything that adds a bit of extra pep to that, I think, would be really good. And you made the point that we're quite used to seeing horses, particularly over sprint distances, coming over, and 2-year-olds, of course, over sprint distances. We're less au fait with it over different distances, although, of course, it does happen. So I think this will certainly add a bit of extra pep to the Eclipse, and obviously the July Cup is a positive as well.
I'm sure the sharp NLD listeners would have noticed that we didn't have our Hong Kong segment as usual on Wednesday, and that's because we're having it today instead. So over to J.A. McGrath.
Excitement levels are high in Hong Kong racing at present. California Spangle was responsible for a stunning win in the Elquaz Sprint at Maidan at Dubai last weekend. His trainer Tony Cruz is now weighing up options for more international travel. Royal Ascot's Queen Elizabeth II Jubilee Stakes is one suggestion, though Cruz seems more inclined to look at Japan. The 6 furlong Sprinter's Stakes there is a feasible target. Cruz won that race many years back with Silent Witness. But his immediate objective will be to get the Son of Star Spangled Banner to the Group 1 Chairman Sprint Prize at the big Champions Day meeting on April the 28th. In winning, California Spangle moved up to 10th in Thoroughbred Racing Commentary Global Rankings. It now means that Hong Kong currently has 3 horses in the top 10 ranked horses in the world. Not bad for a place with a horse population of around 1,200. Golden 60 has returned to the number 1 slot. Romantic Warrior is ranked number 3, while Lucky Swainess has dropped to number 11 and lost his claim to the Sprinter's Crown, for the time being at least. Lucky Swainess runs at Sha Tin on Sunday in the Group 2 Sprint Cup with Hugh Bowman aboard for the first time. He was beaten at his last 2 starts. He needs to win this, which he should, if he's going to be a realistic contender for the Group 1 Chairman Sprint Prize 3 weeks later. As I said, excitement levels are high, and apart from what has been happening on the race course on race day, the best and most encouraging news came from the barrier trials earlier this week. Golden 60, who hasn't run since winning the Hong Kong Mile in December because of a leg injury, came through his trial in good order. Vincent Ho, his regular partner, said he felt better than ever. Golden 60 is scheduled to make his last appearance on April the 28th, though the swan song has not yet been formally announced, and Vincent Ho is due back in the saddle at Happy Valley next Wednesday. Vincent has been on the sidelines after being injured in a fall in January. That's all on the Hong Kong beat this week. I'll have more for you next week.
Lydia is still with me, and Lydia, just before you go, have you got a winning tip for us, well, this afternoon or this weekend?
Well, I've got a tip. Let's hope it is a winner. Today I'm going to Lingfield at the 405, which is a mile handicap, and the horse is Tadrib for Michael Atwater and William Carson. Tadrib goes really well at Lingfield. He's got a couple of wins over 7 furlong. He returned from a long break over a mile last time with a promising fifth, and he was out wide as well. He's dropping in class. He's well treated on old form, and I'm expecting him to come on for the run. I acknowledge that Arthur's Realm is a big danger, but I like Tadrib at the price. So it's Tadrib in the 405 today, Friday at Lingfield, for Michael Atwater and William Carson.
My thanks to Lydia, and thanks to all my guests today. I'll be back from 9 p.m. with the Saturday edition this evening, and Nick will be back in the hot seat from Monday. Thanks so much for listening. Have a good weekend.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with FitStairs.